My name is Eric, and I welcome you to our Black Gay Diaspora podcast, where we, as LGBTQ plus citizens, come together to inspire and educate each other on who we are and our respective countries and professions. Through topics and guest interviews, our Black Gay Diaspora podcast celebrates individuals making a difference. Loving who we love is not a choice. Being who we're meant to be can be. We are here. You are welcome. We are community. Welcome to season 4 of our Black Gay Diaspora podcast and to the first episode in the new bi-monthly On the Panel series, where our Black Gay Diaspora podcasts return to join me and sometime others to share insights and experiences on various topics. For this discussion, I am joined by episode 63's Byron Adu from Australia, episode 12's Lennox Benson from the UK, and episode 57, George Kukimanga from Malawi. Thank you to episode 2, Victor Chikolowe, for connecting me to George. Thank you, Victor. I am looking forward to being in conversation with these three intelligent individuals and to learn more about how we are across the globe and how we connect, celebrate, and encourage each other. So, hey guys, welcome. How are you?
Hello. Good. How are you?
Doing well. Maybe just to start us off, if the three of you could introduce yourselves, what you do, and where you're from, starting with Byron, go alphabetically.
Okay. Yeah, so I am Byron Adu. I live in Nam, or Melbourne, as we call it, in Australia. I created a platform called Every Minority a few years ago, which is for queer people of color to share and showcase their stories and experiences about living as diverse people in Australia. But I've also spent several years working for the state government here in diversity and inclusion policy. About 6 months ago, I took a step back from that. So I'm on what is called a radical sabbatical and just taking a bit of a break. I'm doing some house renovations and kind of thinking about my next pivot and what I will be doing next.
A radical sabbatical. I like that. Yeah. Well, thank you for joining me. Thank you for returning. Lennox, can you share who you are?
Yeah, sure. So hi, I'm Lennox Benson. I'm currently working at the British Museum in a front of house role. I also write children's books on the side. My first children's picture book was called The Biracial Butterfly, and it's about a young boy who explores his background through musical rhymes and colorful imagery. The second book, which was released, I think, at some point last year, that's called Beau Blue and Parker Pink. It's a book exploring gender identity about a girl who's sporty, she likes the color blue, and about a boy who's quite artsy. He likes the color pink. And it's kind of like a relatively simple and, again, a rhyming story which explores gender identity. The third book, which has been written and is currently being illustrated, it's called The Kings and Prince. And it's about essentially a black queer family of two fathers and their son. And that one, I'm not entirely sure when it will be published, but hopefully soon. It's just currently being illustrated. So that's that. I'm due to start studying again this year. So hopefully in September, I should be studying at UCL, doing a master's in museum studies. Yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at in life right now.
Okay. You said UCL?
Yeah, University College London.
Okay. And George, can you share about who you are and where you're from?
All right, thank you. Sorry for being on and off. I think today our internet is not that good. Yes, I'm George Kajmanga from Malawi. Currently, I'm working at the Social Justice Foundation. It's an LGBT-led organization that was established last year. But previously, I worked with Nyasa Rainbow Alliance as a programs and operations manager for about 7 years or so. Yep.
Before I forget, I wanted to ask, because I don't want to assume, but how you, each of you, identify under the LGBTQ plus umbrella. Byron?
G for me.
G for you, okay. Lennox?
I'm currently somewhat questioning. I initially grew up identifying more specifically as gay, But I think over recent years, I think I'm becoming a bit more pan, but I'm not necessarily sure if it's pansexual or possibly more so pan-romantic. So I would say it's somewhat fluid at the moment, but I think primarily my main attraction is to other males. But I think it's just becoming slightly more fluid as I age, possibly.
And George?
Gay man.
Gay, okay. To kick us off, the tagline for Our Black Gay Diaspora Podcast is Together Celebrating Our Global Community. So I wanted this inaugural episode to be about community, communities, because we're all in different locations. Community can mean not just us within the queer community, but just within our own familial communities, our cities, our countries, etc. So growing up, before you came out or acknowledged your attractions, your same-sex attractions and or gender identities, what was your concept of community?
Yes, so for me, before I kind of fully understood my sexuality or racial identity and things like that, community for me was family, really, because it was growing up, it was my mom, my sister and I. We moved around quite a lot. I think we lived in about 8 or 9 houses. I went to about 6 or 7 different schools in different parts of Australia. So that was the kind of only consistent and constant in my life, because friends would change and I wasn't close to extended family members. So yeah, when you're talking about that concept of community, that for me was my community in a sense. And I know that's family, but that was the kind of my world for several years, really, until my mid-teens, which was around the time that we kind of settled in one place. And also I started to understand and explore my sexuality.
I know you live in Melbourne. Was this in Melbourne?
So this was in a place called Adelaide, which is where I was born, but then we moved to Sydney, which some people may know. It was the largest city in Australia. Now Melbourne's the largest. And then moved around Sydney and then returned to Adelaide and then stayed there for a few years. And then, I think about 7 years later, I moved to Melbourne.
And what about you, George? What was your concept of community?
Well, it was different before because, as it is in the country, since in Maui, it's criminalized. So it was not an easy thing to know much about the community in this space, but much of it is just you as a person trying to understand it yourself, to connect with other people. But it was not easy to have a sense or feel of the community at that moment.
And you are in Malawi, but what city did you grow up in?
I grew up in different cities, but most of Luanda.
And Lennox?
Growing up as a kid, similar to Byron, my first sense of community was family. As I got a bit older, it then became the church, because I was raised in a Christian household and I gained some good connections through Sunday school. I guess in school, that's where some people tend to find community too, but that was a big challenge for me. Me being a minority in the schools that I went to, because I went to predominantly white schools. I was one of the few people of color there. It wasn't really the best experience, not simply because I was an ethnic minority, but more so because I was singled out for, I guess, my sexuality, because for certain reasons, people could tell that, I was a certain way. So it became a bit of an issue. After coming out, I met someone called Jilly McCauley. He's like a priest in London, a Nigerian priest. And through him, he introduced me to all these other fabulous black queer men. And through them, I eventually formed a network and they soon became my community. But it's not just limited to, the community of black queer people. I've also connected with other people from different backgrounds. For example, one of my mentors at the moment is an elderly English woman.
Yeah, I'll ask or I'll bring that up a little bit later about being queer and as we get older, because that was something I remember in my episode with George that you brought to the table about how we can support each other as we age, as we get older. Of course, as we get older for ourselves, but also for the community that's already here of people of a certain age and how we can support them and let them know that they're still a part of the community. You know, I just wanted to say from my own personal experience that I relate to, in some ways, what, you know, what you shared, Byron, and also what you shared, George, as far as moving around a lot. So I never really felt part of a community as specifically as a Black person for that reason, partly. And then also growing up in Arizona, which is one of the states that doesn't have a hugely large Black population. Yeah. And then I didn't have the religious community that you brought up, Lennox, because we didn't go to church that much. And I know, at least from an American or a Black American perspective, the church is a very strong component in Black communities. In a generic sense, it's like, oh, community for queer people is going to a particular neighborhood. But, you know, there is that for those of us, especially those of us who come from countries where we are in the minority, where we have these sub communities too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then as far as perception, because Byron, I discovered you through your article, just pulled up here. I tried to be a homie, but I wanted to listen to Brittany. Great title. But I related to it because of the expectations, either before coming out or after we come out, of us being specifically male, Black, or people of color, and being queer, and those expectations that we have in our formative years of how people or what people expect of us within our families and then in the larger communities. And to put that out on the table, what was each of your experiences with that? I guess I'll ask you again, Byron, since I referenced your article.
I thought I'd let someone else go first. I think there's, like you're saying, Eric, there's some parallels between maybe our early lives, because for me, living in places in Australia, but particularly Adelaide, which is where I was born and spent most of my kind of formative years, there were very few people of color, let alone people that were Black or from African background. So I had very little to draw on in terms of who I could be, what I could look like. It was very much about Eminem's posse of the people called the D12 and that kind of like hoodie, baggy jean kind of things that people at school would expect or think that I should dress like. There wasn't that kind of tapestry and diversity within the Black community that you can see now. You have more access to that because there are so many more diverse representations. I look at someone like Lil Nas X and think I wish he was around when I was younger, because it was just kind of unimaginable, at least people within my network, for a Black person to be gay. Having to kind of work things out for myself, but at the same time always having these kind of outside influences and projecting an idea of who I should be. That's taken a long time actually to kind of work through who am I and what am I about, and am I this way because of what other people expect, or is this being true to the essence of who I am? Australia, which is predominantly white, and being born here, I kind of latched onto being gay without so much thinking about the cultural diversity to me. And then that part has come later in my journey as well, and understanding, you know, being a Black gay man, what that means and how that's different to just being like a Black man or a gay man in this country.
George, for you growing up in Malawi, were you aware of gender expectations around being male?
As a country, Malawi is deeply rooted in culture as well as the region. So there are a lot of stereotypes in the country in relation to gender roles and stuff. So yes, it resonates a lot where, you know, the community is expecting the queer community to do A, B, C, D. But it kind of conflicts with what someone desires or what someone feels in terms of expressing themselves. So I can relate to the Britney Spears.
Yeah. You know, Lennox, my travels so far internationally, the UK, of course, is the most similar to me. What was your experience like as far as the expectations, specifically, as I mentioned, being Black and male?
growing up in my household with my mother and my younger brother, my mother from an early age saw that I was slightly, I guess, different to most boys, especially most black boys. And I think because of that, luckily for me, she was able to give me some, you know, the breathing space to express myself. But I think my mother's main concern was how I would fare outside of the household, especially going to an all-boys school and being one of the few black boys there. I think that's when my self-expression, my identity was questioned as a black queer male. I found myself having to slightly modify parts of myself as a way of trying to fit in into my surroundings. But in doing so, it caused a lot of frustration. And, you know, I went to all boys' schools and the majority of boys there were white. I think that's when I really started to struggle. Even though I had a few companions in those schools I went to, it was still very much a challenge for me to be authentic. I think a part of me kind of healing from that trauma was writing my second book, my second children's picture book, Bo Blue and Parker Pink, exploring gender identity through the eyes of two black, I wouldn't call them queer, but they're two unconventional characters. You know, in doing so, I'm hoping that those books can be a beacon of light to other children, other black queer children who are going through something similar.
No, that's important. I know for me with this platform, and that's what fuels it at the end of the day. How can I give or pay it forward for the next generation of specifically black queer individuals? As you said, Lennox, that I don't have to, or they don't have to go through that. I think one of you may have brought it up, but the big S word, I know for me, within black communities, but I was more aware of it when I was in school with how people perceived me as a black boy was the expectation of me being really good at sports. And at the beginning of every school year, I was always the first one picked. And inside I'd be like, oh shit, here we go again. You know, prepare to disappoint.
Start the year off first hits, end the year last hits.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I can relate.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I can still remember them. Come on, come on, come on. We picked Eric. And I'm like, all right, here comes the ball.
Even though after that a similar experience in school of being picked last for sports teams and not necessarily excelling in sports, I think as I'm getting a bit older, I think that I'm actually starting to develop a bit of an interest in watching sports. And let me just put it out there, it's not because I'm looking to, like, you know, Google at the men playing sports. That's not the reason why. But it's more so because I just have, I'm developing like a slight genuine, like, curiosity about sports and, like, somewhat an appreciation too. In a way, it's kind of like me becoming more of the person that I dreamed of becoming when I was younger. A friend suggested that perhaps I could join, like, a gay sports team. I think that's, like, one small step, kind of like me living that dream and possibly healing that trauma from childhood when, you know, I was the last to get picked. So just putting that out there.
No, I recommend that. I was, when I moved to Sydney a few years ago for about 14 months with work, I didn't really know many people there, and I thought, I've always been interested in sports and, like, playing sports and things like that, but I joined a gay tennis team there, and that was a really great way to kind of connect with people and make friends and just feel a little bit more settled, and I felt safe as well, which is something that as a gay man has felt a little bit, as I got older, I came out of school and, like, there were homophobic stuff in sport and things like that, I kind of stepped away from playing sports for quite a few years, so yeah, I think if you can find a team where you can do that, that's really good.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of healing, too, because I know for myself, and it's not unique to us. I think most of my gay friends, regardless of their background, their ethnic background, we all share these stories of sports and how there was a lot of trauma around that. I've never studied it, but I wonder if the reason why there's less interest for most of us males is because consciously or unconsciously, we're aware that that's a way that we will stand out. I can't hide in this type of environment.
I remember playing sport in school and everyone would get changed and have showers in the locker room afterwards. And I just would be terrified to
I was coming at the stage about to come out. I just didn't want people to be like, oh, he's gay and he's getting like just that kind of predatory stuff. I think that I'm just like, I always felt really uncomfortable. And people would think I was strange because I'd like play sport and then have my boxers on and put my uniform back on. And that was what made me feel safe, I guess.
Yeah. I always say it's a journey. You know, I came out, but it's a constant reprogramming or healing, I guess maybe is a better way to put it. Just recently before the recording, I was telling Lennox that I've been working out with friends here, and one of them is a straight male, and he was the one that suggested we work out. But that whole thing you mentioned, buyer than locker room, I know I'm not going to be inappropriate, but I was low grade panicking because I didn't want anybody to assume that I was there to do anything other than shower and change clothes.
I sometimes feel like my thinking hasn't necessarily caught up sometimes to how far some other people's thinking has progressed in that. So over the last 5-10 years, how a straight man might feel around a gay man, whether it's in a sporting environment or socially, has changed quite a lot. And sometimes I'm still caught back as a 19-20 year old rather than a guy in his 30s with other straight men whose thinking has progressed because they've been exposed to so many different ways of thinking and being.
I just wanted to add on the subject of healing and kind of like becoming more authentic in regards to sports. Do you think that perhaps like with the coming out of various athletes, do you think that's possibly encouraged some queer people, specifically gay males, to, you know, explore that side of themselves, exploring some territory which they thought was kind of like alien to them? Because sports is generally seen as something being very classically masculine. So I think with some athletes coming out as gay, and also with the creation of gay sports teams, I think it's kind of like it can be a really a therapeutic vehicle for people to explore that side of themselves, which was often suppressed when they were younger.
Good question.
No, I agree. I think there's that element of hypermasculinity that has made some of us feel uncomfortable over the years. But also, I don't know about other countries, but here in Australia, our kind of national, we call it football, but it's different to your football, soccer. It's another sport called football to confuse things. But, you know, they've started doing pride rounds and things to make people feel more comfortable. I think when you start seeing that at like national level of quite popular sports, that starts to open those gates of acceptance for people. And nothing's perfect because there was just a player on the weekend who used a homophobic slur against another player on the field. He got a suspension for that. But so you still know like not everyone necessarily is on board. But yeah, you start at the top. And then we've seen at the Australian Open with the tennis, they have, there's like a side tournament, which is for queer people that runs at the same time. And there's so many queer sports clubs now. So yeah, I think that people coming out and creating environments of safety or, you know, demonstrating leadership has helped a lot of queer people feel more comfortable. Yeah.
What is your take, George? Because you're of the four of us, you're on the continent of Africa, Southern Africa. Have you noticed any changes over the years with people coming out internationally in sports, specifically Black or males?
In our context, it's kind of different. Being in the country, for example, it's not possible to have gay teams per se. But I would say that I've seen sports as a tool where people are also able to express themselves freely, especially from the community. I've seen a lot of queer folks joining, let's say, here netball, and it's not an issue per se. Yes, it plays a role, but it doesn't have a big impact in our kind of setting. But yes, over the years, there's been an improvement. But at the moment, it would be very, very difficult to say that, okay, fine, this is a gay team, and then people can have the I can play against them or something like that. It can't just come out to the whole nation like that. It's a totally different environment. But I do agree to the point where individually people are able to express themselves through sports because they feel like those are the spaces of world that they are most woke and regardless of their status.
Now, if I remember correctly, Malawi being LGBT is not illegal.
Yes, being LGBT is not illegal, but the act is illegal. Yes.
We've been talking about, of course, us all identifying as male or being perceived as a male. There's, of course, a challenge with being lesbian or being a woman who has same gender attractions, but it seems that it's more acceptable for lesbians, I'll use that for the moment, to participate in sports or to be maybe more out in those types of arenas. But maybe because the assumption a lot of times is if you're lesbian, then you're more masculine.
We would say so. As I'm saying, it also goes back to how the society perceives people. Of course, the same thing, it would be quite easier for, let's say, females to, you know, hold each other, do whatever publicly, unlike those who identify as male. Even in sports, if lesbians do A, B, C, D, it's not necessarily an issue because it's how the society is structured. So it brings a challenge for those who identify as male or male because of the perception that the society has in the country.
It's definitely a lot to ponder. I've kind of been focusing at the moment on how we deal with the outside world as far as specifically our gender identity or orientation. But prior to coming out, what was your awareness or perception of the queer community or communities, depending on where you're from in the world? Like, did you have any concept of this community of gay people?
When I first became aware that there was a gay community from about as young as, I don't know, I guess about 7 or 8, I was always rather somewhat frightened, actually. But that was partly because of the stories that I was told by people within my family. Sometimes, like, if we were together in a group and we were watching a TV show and there was a queer character on the television, like an aunt or a cousin would make a comment as saying such things as, oh, those people. And I always associated that phrase, those people, in a negative light. That further caused me to kind of like suppress parts of myself, which may have appeared somewhat flamboyant or, you know, stereotypically queer in some way. But I think as I got older, my sense of what the gay community was like started to shift slightly, partly because I started to make some platonic queer friendships when I was a teenager. And in my late tweens, I think those friendships were pivotal in shifting the narrative within myself about how the queer community can be. Though I did used to sometimes hear stories from those friends of how they had some gay friends or some gay relatives and how the lifestyle that they led was rather, I guess in some ways could have been seen as quite toxic. So it was just one TV show in the UK was an eye-opener for me into one side of what the gay community is like. It was a show called Queer as Folk. The main characters, they're all white males, and to an extent, I could still relate to them, but there was one character in particular, I can't remember his name now, he's quite a famous actor now, but he was portrayed as a school teen, and he was kind of like being introduced into the gay world, at least one side of it, through like some older gay men. Through his experience, I kind of like thought, okay, is this what the wider world is like for the gay community? And I was just thinking, is this something that everyone wants to be a part of? It seemed to clash with the values that I was raised with in a Christian household. I was seeking, you know, black, queer people who could possibly be mentors. And I found one, as I'd mentioned him before, Jule McCauley. He was a Nigerian priest in London who runs inclusive church services. And I thought, okay, this seems more like my cup of tea. Fortunately, I guess, he introduced me to another side of the queer community, which was more in line with my values at the time.
I think it's so beautiful, Lennox, that you were able to connect with him and find community or a different part of the community in that way. Because, yeah, it's definitely something that I haven't had the opportunity, I didn't have the opportunity to do here. Mine was more, this is this community, gay community, party, sex, drugs, rock and roll, all that kind of thing. And
the kind of nuances of that, and then growing up in a small, at this point in a small town and being the only person of color most of the times I'd go to the gay bar, I didn't know there was anything else out there. And then moving to Melbourne, and I did meet queer friends of color that would still be doing the same thing, like going to the gay bars and just being like the only people of color in the gay bars. I've moved away from that lifestyle and things like that, obviously focused in different directions, but it is still hard to meet, I find, for me at least, around my age, which is similar age to you, Lennox, queer people of color who are not part of that kind of partying, clubbing world. There's no kind of inroads or ways to be able to find them, so to speak, as easily as I would like.
I do wonder... Oh, sorry.
I was just saying, we need the priest here.
No, you bring up a good point, Byron, because even, you know, because I'm older than everyone here, and the awesomeness of online dating, I say facetiously, I still find that men, as we get even older, oh, well, we're going clubbing. And I'm like, aren't you a little old for that? My opinion. And not the idea of just going to hang out or whatever, but I sometimes wonder if someone to being black, sometimes as being queer, we get caught up in the expectations, the stereotypes, and thinking, oh, I'm not authentically a black gay man if I don't act a certain way or sound a certain way or only do these types of activities. I think that's
been my revelation over the last couple of years is going, like, I've been kind of sucked into that world, as most gay people, queer people are when they're younger. Yeah, the last years is like, that's actually not what it's about. And how do you kind of be part of organizations? But even when I've joined like one of the queer sports teams here, I'm like, there still wasn't much diversity on it either. So it is sometimes a struggle to find that kind of like intersection of people of color who are queer.
Back to, I think, how we creating our communities. In a sense, something that, you know, one of the things I like about you, George, is that you're an advocate in Malawi of creating these spaces, especially in parts of the world that I think those of us in the U.S. and Europe and other parts of the world are still, we're not being, unfortunately, given this information that there's soldiers like you on the ground who are looking for ways to create community and create spaces. But I want to ask specifically you how you're doing that, and then also just put it out there to the group, how can we create those spaces for us? But just with you, how are you creating spaces in Malawi, George?
That's a long story. But yeah, it's been quite a journey looking where we're coming from. If you look back maybe 6-7 years ago, there were quite a few movements in Malawi. But at the moment, we see a lot of, you know, organizations emerging in the space. Maybe so far we have about 10 organizations that are led by the queer folks. If we come together, speaking with one voice, having a common advocacy agenda, we are banking on the intersectionalities, because it is a battle for everyone, whether you are queer or not. So we make sure that we try to bring everyone on board, because at the end of the day, it's not an LGBT issue, it's a human rights issue that involves everyone. So we've been trying that much a lot for the past 2-3 years, and it seems to be working. But other than that, yes, we're still having legal battles. I think, I don't know if I shared last time, that we are having some cases in court, which are likely going to lead to decriminalization if it comes to our favor. But if not, it's going to create a hostile environment as well. So we need to be ready for anything. So it's a continuous battle where we need support, we need solidarity from different stakeholders. But at the end of the day, it's not a matter of having that fear, because most people fear bringing up the issues. And we understand, because of the community we are living in. But if someone else doesn't do it, then no one else is going to do it. Someone else just has to stand for it and bring out the issues out there.
I like that you put it in the context of human rights. I'll say from a personal place. So last year I was interviewed for another podcast. It wasn't connected to queer or being Black. I didn't like the way that this person asked this question because it disconnects the continent of Africa from the rest of the world. And I was asked like, oh, well, I heard that there's all this homophobia in Africa. And I'm like, I didn't say it, but I was like, you and I are both American. It exists in the U.S., exists in Europe. It's everywhere. And we don't realize that, at least in my lifetime, a lot of these legal gains that we've achieved in my home country and other countries has only been in the last 15, 20 years. That's not that long. Yeah, you put it in the context of human rights and support. It's a reminder to me that the connections, how we need to connect each other to help you on the ground where you're at, vice versa, wherever we are in the world. And yeah, just to make us stronger.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you, George, for that. But also, how can we within our own cities, countries, or just connecting with other organizations globally, how can we in real time or virtually create communities? I use plural because we're four. If people were driving by, saw us in a car, they would describe us as four Black men, but we're much more than that. You know, we're American, we're Australian, we're English, we're Malawian, and then there's more underneath the surface of that. So yeah, how can we do that?
Do you mean create communities with each other or in terms of just communities for ourselves within our countries? Like communities with other people that are like us in terms of what you're talking about, Black, gay, queer, that kind of thing? Or
More specifically that, because one of my motivators for this platform is that there's larger communities of queer people, and technically I am a part of that. But what I keep challenging myself to say more publicly is that I'm still very invisible in queer spaces. It's that thing of, I don't want to wait for you to give me permission to walk through the door. So how can I find ways to create community for us?
This is something I've been thinking about the last year or so, is I want to try and create that community here where I am. And I've kind of sat on my hands a bit or thought that I would just bump into people in a cafe and then we'll just become friends and grow our network from there or something. And it hasn't really happened. But I think participating in this podcast right now is inspiring me and motivating me to action some of the things that I've thought about before. So, because I do have gay friends and gay friends of color, but using those networks to try and find other people in that way. And I have thought about, we have a website here called Meetup. I think that might be overseas as well. Just like a social networking piece. Yeah, I've been thinking for a while about just creating like a meetup group on there specifically for, I mean, Australia's demographic is quite small, so I don't know if I'd limit it to Black and queer, but it'd probably be people of color and queer in a kind of, yeah, social setting, whether it's drinks, not in partying mode, but I mean, like go to a quiet bar or have a picnic or go out for lunch or something like that. I'm motivated now from being part of this to actually initiate something rather than kind of sit and think about it and like, oh, will this happen? Because even participating in this right now is really nice for me. And I'm like, I wish we could be doing this face-to-face. So yeah, I want to try and action that and make it happen here.
Thank you for the meetup. I completely forgot about that.
I'll let you know if it works. Yeah.
For you, Lennox, in the UK, you know, I've been fortunate to connect with people like Dennis Carney, you mentioned, Jede, and there's Mark Thompson and others in the UK who are very proactive. Even though you have that there, I'll, yeah, ask you that question too.
When it comes to creating communities within the with other Black queer people, I think the internet is such an invaluable tool. It's something to be utilized as well as you can. There are various ways in which you can connect with other people of similar backgrounds. For example, social media, Instagram, Twitter, accounts which are specifically geared toward catering towards the Black queer community. And it's just quite nice to kind of, you know, engage with people on those accounts and have conversations in the comments and follow each other. And also, as Byron said, Meetup, you know, the website Meetup. Through Meetup, I've met some, you know, some fantastic characters who have become some, you know, some good friends over the years. I think the discussion that the queer community is being brought up more now, more than ever before, as opposed to being swept under the rug. That might be one small step towards tolerance, which may hopefully one day lead to acceptance, give people more freedom and feel more safe to form communities of Black queer people. Those of us living in Western countries, I think just by us leading by example, is shining a light to others who are living in other countries where they can't be their authentic selves, but they can keep the hope that they can also too one day feel free, feel comfortable, feel safe to form a community of other like-minded Black queer people.
Thank you both for that. You both just said that that the answers are already there. You know, the internet, Meetup, connecting, you know, this platform, hopefully, like with George and how I met George through Victor Chukalogwe, or how I know there's individuals like George and Victor in Malawi, there's Casey in South Africa, there's a Ruel Okeya who I interviewed in Kenya. So, yeah, the answer is there. I just needed to maybe slow down a little bit to see it. So thank you for that. But George, yeah, for you, being in a majority Black country, that question to you also.
The answer is already there. Yes, as mentioned about social media, I was just listening because in my head I was trying to, it was sounding now like a project as well on its own. Sorry, that's my thinking in another context. But whilst right there, I was also trying to check on issues around security, because even though the internet is there, but there have been a series of issues where people are being, attacked. How best can we secure the online communities that are being created, because they are there? But I like also the other part where you touched around, leading as an example, as a beacon of hope to other countries. That is very important, because that is also how we were, encouraged to do our first Pride Parade in Malawi, because it was an observation from what are other countries doing, So there is hope that at least we can do something. So yes, if that continues, I believe over time we should be able to shift minds, we should be able to change a lot of things in our respective environment. So yeah.
Thank you. I hear hope on that. If it's okay, because I know we need to wrap up, if you guys would be open whenever our schedules are open for all the four of us to create a part two, because I feel there's more here, and I do have a few more questions. That's, of course, if you guys are okay with that.
And yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Thank you. I want to wrap this up in the same way that I wrap up the other episodes, and just to ask if you have any final thoughts or insights about community, about anything that came up in this particular conversation.
I'll start. I'll say thanks for this meeting. We're talking about connecting with the community. I'll reach out to Lennox and Brown to see how best we can also interact moving forward. So it's been a meaningful discussion. Thanks so much for this platform. And also, one of the learning items that I've also got from here, it's to do with the issue around the sports. It's coming at a good time, because someone was, approached me some 2 weeks ago, was asking why we are not investing in sports to do with the queer community in Malawi. So I didn't have a lot of answers around it, and seeing that it's also coming out in this conversation, it's something that we also have to work on. So yeah, I will be contacting you guys to check how best we can do that in Malawi, since we brought it up in the space. It's quite insightful. Otherwise, thank you so much, guys.
Oh, thank you. You, Lennox, in London.
First off, I'd just like to thank you, Eric, for creating this platform and bringing us all together to have this discussion. I think your platform is one example of a community which can empower, enlighten and inspire other people, and also be a source of comfort, because I think that, at least in my humble opinion, I agree with the maxim that no man is an island. And even though some people may describe themselves as being lone wolves, I think naturally as humans, we're social creatures. We generally do need people. We need each other. It's healthy to have a diverse network of people of different backgrounds, but I think it's also equally essential, if not, to be honest, more so essential for you to have that collective of people who you can identify with on a variety of levels, having other, you know, black mixed queer people who we can, you know, communicate with and share experiences. So I think your platform, Eric, has been, to be honest, it's been a beautiful way of bringing us together and having these wholesome discussions. And again, on the subject of sports, as George mentioned before, I've been thinking more so about sports now, not just simply watching sports, but also possibly participating, because I find that by being physically active, no matter what age you are, it has so many health benefits, holistic benefits, not just simply physical, but also mental as well. I think once you're active, your mind is also becomes more open, like a parachute in a way. And so I think if you're able to have, you know, sports as a vehicle to gaining holistic health with other people who are of a similar background, that could be such a beautiful way of connecting, creating this a jambalaya of people of various backgrounds. I think in a way it kind of like helps me enrich my life perspective and can help make me a more well-rounded person and give other people a chance to share their stories, because we're all in this together. So
thank you for that. Yeah, Byron.
Yeah, in a similar vein, firstly, shout out to you, Eric, for enabling these connections and conversations. It's such a great platform for people, and I love that it's out there and accessible for anyone to look at, and particularly think about like young, queer, black people being able to access this and know about the diversity of black voices globally. It's really impactful. And I love what Lennox said about the tapestry of the kind of people and community that we have in our lives. I think that that is really important as well, because yes, we are black and queer on the part of the LGBTQ plus community, but having that diversity of voices and experiences in our lives is really enriching and really important, I think, as well. And my kind of like message would be for people to kind of maintain the essence of who they are, which is something that I think I lost at times in my life, thinking that I needed to be or behave in a certain way or live a particular type of lifestyle. And I think it can be really hard when you have those external pressures to not be persuaded by that or to doubt or question yourself. But if you do have a good sense of self, I think that that helps in terms of like where you head in life and the types of people that you attract around you as well.
Thank you. Thank you, each of you, for this. I'll admit I was a little nervous in the beginning, which is always a good sign for me because it means I really care. But I want to thank each of you for joining me for this first episode of these types of discussions. And I heard diversity and tapestry and another word, jambalaya. I love that, because one of the beautiful things that I'm learning with this platform and specifically with the four of us is we're four, you know, use air quotes, black men, black queer men, and we all have these, you know, beautiful different accents and in these backgrounds and these cultures, and all of them are important. So I thank you guys for coming on to this.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you for spending time with us. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, comment, and subscribe. Share with your friends too. You can also follow us on Instagram at Our Black Gay Diaspora and on Twitter at BLK Gay Diaspora. Until next time.